Today is May 29th, 2013, and this is episode number 206 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, prancer size enthusiast. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit MacObserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@MacObserver.com. And if you would like to know more about prancer sizes, check the show notes.
Oh, my God. Now I have to put a link to prancer size in the show notes.
You do.
Let me win. Yes, you do. And I apologize unreservedly to our entire listening audience for the link that Brian is making me put into the notes this week. And although I do have to say, your prancer size gallop, best I've ever seen.
You have not seen me do a prancer size gallop, sir.
I have in my head, and all I can say is giddy up, my friend.
Fair. Well, all right. I can't really argue against that. Just stick a note before the link that says, do not watch this.
Yeah.
Do not watch this, and then it'll be, you know, then we'll have the link. So, yeah. Anyway, it has been an interesting week, especially considering the fact that there was a holiday, Monday, which is Memorial Day for those in the U.S. Usually tends to make things a little bit slow, especially in the couple of weeks heading into WWDC.
Right.
But
we came back from the Memorial Day weekend to Tim Cook speaking or being interviewed at the All Things D11 conference on Tuesday evening.
Right. Right. An event that he has traditionally, you know, like the second year in a row, has used to use code to hint at things.
That's true. And it's okay to say traditionally, because it, in my family, I mean, really, for my mom, she can just think about something and it's become tradition. So for Tim to do something 2 years in a row, I mean, that's like etched in stone.
I don't even know what to say, man.
Yeah, well, you know, just remember prancer size.
Yeah, prancer size, right. Well, so let's talk about some of the things that he told us. Because he of course was all very circumspect about everything, and it was definitely all in Cook code, not outright comments or anything.
True. How about if we start with his comments on wearable tech?
Wearable tech, yeah. He dissed on Google Glass.
Yes, he did.
He said, I'm actually looking for the quotes here in our story. He said.
You're doing a great job of stalling.
I know. It's not really even that good a job. He said, there are lots of gadgets in the wearable space. I would say that the ones that are doing more than one thing, there's nothing great out there that I've seen. That was one of the first things that really stood out for me, because while he's not saying that Google Glass is not great, he is saying that Google Glass is not great, because Google Glass is one of the things that is out there.
That is definition. True. Right. So Google Glass gets lumped in with that statement, even though he didn't direct it or mention it directly.
Right. Now, he did say that there were some interesting things about it. I'm looking for the exact quote again. There are some positives in Google Glass, and he said that it's probably likely to appeal to certain vertical markets, which is like damning with faint praise.
Yes, indeed.
That comment about vertical markets, while true, is a classic case of damning with faint praise. The likelihood that it has broad appeal is hard to see, he said.
Yes, he also made a comment about he wears glasses because he has to. He can't imagine people wanting to wear glasses because they don't have to, or when they don't have to.
Right. Yeah, so the notion of, I mean, he's basically saying that the idea that, that people are that that everybody's going to want to put on a pair of these glasses. He's not directly approaching it from this angle, but Google Glass to me seems to be one of those things that nerds think are cool. I'm a nerd. I think they're cool. I have all sorts of reservations about them, but I certainly think that they're cool. And, you know, in this case, the nerds who are in charge are mistaking what's cool for what lots of people will want to do. And I have to agree with that. And I think there's going to end up being a lot of pushback on Google Glass, too. I think that the people are not going to want to be filmed just because they happen to be, you know, in the same room or walking down the street with some person who's got a pair of Google glasses on.
Take it to a little bit more extreme. Let's say you're at a conference or trade show,
mm-hmm.
and you have to run off and take care of business, and you're standing at your urinal, and the guy next to you looks over and goes, "Hey," and he's wearing Google glasses. There's some things I don't want people filming.
Yeah, you know, and I don't have any modesty issues.
Yeah, it's not a modesty thing. I mean, yeah, people that know me know the modesty thing isn't a deal. It's more of the invasion of privacy and where are those pictures and videos going to end up where I don't have control over them.
Right. And I don't appreciate not having a say in Google tracking me. You know, if I choose to use a Google product, I do so with the knowledge that I'm being tracked. You know, everything that Google does is designed to collect information about us. Every single product they have, even the ones that give back, they're all designed to collect information about us so that they can sell it. Now, if I'm choosing to do that, that's one thing. But if I'm being tracked for where I am or whom I'm with or the places that I'm eating or the places that I'm shopping or the things that I'm wearing or the things that I'm doing because someone else is wearing a pair of Google glasses, that bugs me.
Yes, I have a problem with that as well. The notion of giving up my privacy without my consent.
Yeah.
I have a problem with that. And other people wearing Google Glass means that I'm giving up my privacy without consent. Now,
right.
I know you can say anyone can walk down the street with a digital camera or hold up their iPhone and video as they're walking down the street. And
it's true.
And you have no control over that. But if you walk into the men's room at a restaurant or at a trade show and you're holding up your iPhone taking some video, I'm going to stop you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. And there's also a difference, too, because someone filming you does not automatically mean that you're being tracked. Someone seeing you with Google Glass automatically means that you are being tracked because Google's facial recognition is fantastic. And this is part of the reason why this product exists in the first place. It's so that they can track these things.
You know, and now I'm just imagining being at a trade show. Someone walks into the restroom, says hi to me, and the next thing you know, when I'm doing Google searches, I'm getting inline ads for different types of clothing or oh God, Viagra, who knows?
Right. Which is, you know, God, it's such a weird. It's not weird. It's just such a trade-off because there are things, there are services that can be done for us because of what a company like Google knows about us. And those things can't be done without the company knowing about us. Google Now is the example. We've talked about Google Now on the show. I've written about Google Now. I've talked about Google Now in public. I think it's one of the killer apps for Android. It it's interesting. You can't do a product like Google now without knowing all this stuff about us. And
well, that's what makes Google Now so compelling, from a convenience standpoint, because it does know so much about you.
Right. Right. And so, you know, I get all high and mighty about this stuff. Google tracking me. But, you know, it's there are things that companies can do that they have to know about us to do. And I don't know, it's just so not a black and white situation. But, you know, getting back to Tim Cook, I think that all these things that we're talking about are some of the things that he's alluding to when he says that he doesn't think it's necessarily going to have a broad appeal. And I agree with him. I totally agree with him. And now, of course, his job is to position the things that Apple does as super important and the things that other people are doing as not super important. But the takeaway here should be that we don't think this is important and therefore we're not going to do it, versus simply we're not doing it, so we're trying to tell you that it's important, not important.
Oh, I've got it now. Okay. Yeah, you're right.
So what he also said was that he's extremely interested, profoundly, I think he actually may have been the word he actually used. He's profoundly interested in the wearable space as a whole. And he talked about Nike Fuel Band.
Which he actually wears.
Which he actually wears, yeah. He was wearing one on stage. And he mentioned watches. He said, if we asked a room of 20-year-olds to stand up, if they're wearing a watch, I don't think anyone would stand up, he said. And he said, to convince people that they have to wear something, it has to be incredible.
Right. And so at one point he hints that Apple may be looking at watch technology, but at another point he makes it sound like this is not a path Apple's interested in going down.
Yeah. But all in all, I think he was definitely hinting at saying that a watch was coming and that he thinks that it can be incredible. I think that the rest of it was probably just misdirection.
And it's not like Apple hasn't done misdirection before.
Yeah. Right. So and he also mentioned TV again. He said that we're still working on it. He wouldn't, you know, the Kara Swisher and Walt Mossberg pressed him for details, and of course he wouldn't give any up.
Of course.
And he's been saying this now for not quite a year and a half. That you know, he's interested in TV and since the Walter Isaacson biography of Steve Jobs came out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But he, you know, and he mentioned it last year. That's when he was saying that he was interested in it, last year at the D conference. I mean, and you know, he's still interested in it, I guess. My takeaway from that is that the Cook code here is we are still working on it. But not in a, we're not going to do it. What am I trying to say? I think that he would have distanced himself from it much, that he would have very strongly distanced himself from it if Apple was no longer working on TV. My takeaway is that Apple is still working on TV. That's what I'm trying to say.
You know, I'm still not convinced it's an actual television. I am convinced, though, that Apple is very methodically working towards what they want out of control for our home entertainment world. And maybe it does include a television, but it still may very well just be a device that connects to the television. And we already have the foundation. It's called Apple TV.
Yeah. I still think that Apple is going to release, even if there's a beefed up set top box released with Apple's revolutionary way to control TV. I think that there is a very compelling reason for Apple to release a TV, and that's to move the needle on the revenue. And I think that you can move the needle with a $1,500 television set a lot more easily than you can move it with a $99 set-top box.
Maybe. Although I think that they can sell the $99 set-top box in volume, or maybe a pro version, a high-end version that's $150 or $200. I think they can sell enough of those that they can make up the difference over time in what they would make from televisions, especially because we can get a much faster upgrade cycle. And I just love that we're both certain Apple is going down the television path, but we completely disagree on what that path is.
Yeah. We have beat that one about the face and neck with the broken bottle.
Yes. Yes, we have.
So the long story short, though, is that Apple is still working on that. I believe that they're working on this watch that we've heard tale about for a while.
And I'm not convinced it's really a watch.
Somehow I perceive the opportunity for me to win some money from you.
Well, you're already going to win a dollar off of me when they release that television.
Shall we make it another dollar on the watch?
Sure.
Awesome.
And because I have learned from you, we're putting a close date on this. So they have to release a watch by the end of 2014.
Fair enough.
All right.
What's the close date on the TV? If we didn't have one, we can add one.
I don't remember if we had one.
Let's make that by the end of 2014 also.
All right. That's easy.
Awesome.
And, the way Tim was talking, I got the impression that he felt there were some really compelling things that could be done with wearable technology that's not a watch and it's not glasses. And so I'm wondering if Apple is going down the wearable technology path without taking our wrist along with us. Wow, that sounded horrible.
Here's what I think. I think that... Tim certainly has reason to work with Nike because they've partnered with Nike on advertising.
Sure.
So there is a compelling reason. There's a compelling argument to be made for him preferring the Nike Fuel Band or using the Nike Fuel Band over other products, say Fitbit, simply because they already have a marketing agreement between the two companies.
Well, and they have more than a marketing agreement. They have a working relationship. Remember, right. Night Plus for iPod. I mean, that's where that started.
That's true.
Plug the little dongle into your iPod mini and put the sensor in your shoe. I even have one of those.
Right. That's true. So that argument can be made that he's going to choose to work with Nike for business reasons rather than it necessarily being the best, which is what he said it was. But I think that he has something like that on his wrist because he's wanting to understand how it works.
How it's
like to use something on your wrist.
I can totally see that. I do the same thing. I mean, some of these products that I get sent to play with for health fitness,
mm-hmm.
They're wrist things. And right. In all the years you've known me, how often have you seen me wear a watch?
I have not.
There you go. And it's because I'm not a watch wearer. When mine died several years ago, and I was wearing it up to that point because I had to, I chose to find other ways to tell time. I really didn't want to wear a watch.
Right.
So all these things that I've been putting on my wrist and testing... It's not because I'm excited about wearing things on my wrist. It's because I need to learn about how these products work.
Right. Speaking of which, what do you recommend right now if someone was going to go buy one of the currently wearable fitness-oriented devices, what would you recommend?
Fitbit One.
This is the one that basically looks like a sort of like a keychain dongle that fits in your pocket.
Yes. Yep. That's right. Of everything that I've tried so far, it has become the baseline. It sets the standard for everyone else to meet.
Have you tried the Fuel Band?
I have not tried a Fuel Band. I have tried a couple of the others, and since I'm on the spot right now, I can't remember the names of the other ones that I've tried.
Excellent.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, I know.
We'll edit that out. No one will know.
I know. It's perfect. It'll sound exactly like I know what I'm talking about. I would love to try the Nike Fuel Band. It's just when I'm trying so many other things, having to go out and spend $130 on yet another wrist thing just to see how it works.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. So if you're listening to us, Nike, make sure you send Jeff a Fuel Band.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd love to test it.
Let's move on to the one of the really interesting things I thought was that Tim said that Apple has bought 9 companies in fiscal 2013, so since the beginning of October.
I find that fascinating.
Yeah, because Apple's not known for making acquisitions. Apple is still not known for making large acquisitions. And my very educated guess here is that Apple has not made a large acquisition in these 9 companies.
My guess is if they had made a large acquisition, there would have been public statements to go along with it.
Yeah, and he did specifically say that they had not made an offer on Waze, the company that they were rumored to be interested in several months ago.
Yes, and it's interesting because in one of the other rumors that came out about Waze negotiations, it may have been Google negotiating.
Google and Facebook.
Well, yes, but it may have been the Google rumor specifically that the source said that Apple had never bid on Waze.
I see.
So that's kind of interesting. So that may add some extra credibility to the reports of Google and Waze negotiations. By the way, for people that don't know what Waze is, it's a mapping company, turn-by-turn directions. But the thing is, they collect the data that makes the system continually more accurate by crowdsourcing. So when you're using the application, it's giving information about roads and traffic back to Waze so that can be shared with other people in real time. And the application also includes little, I'll call them hide-and-seek games, where there's locations that if you go and find them, you get badges or other little in-app prizes. By doing that, they are able to pick areas where they need to have more data and get people to go there and get the data for them. So they're giving people extra incentives to go and drive or walk to places where they need data. So it's actually a really cool idea because your entire user base is feeding data to you on a regular basis that improves the accuracy of the system overall.
Yeah, I wonder why Apple is not interested in it.
They already have a working deal with Waze, so that they are using data from Waze for their maps.
Yes, but should Facebook or Google buy the company, it is very likely that Apple will no longer be able to access that data.
Which tells me that whatever Apple's doing with that data isn't as critical as the deals they have with other companies.
That is probably true. That's probably true. So Apple usually, for the last several years, has purchased 6 to 7 companies a year. We usually hear about, 2 or 3 of those?
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Two or three of those per year. Maybe 4 make it to public news. If it's a public company that they're buying, of course, that has to be announced because it's a public company and there are all sorts of regulations covering what happens when public companies are taken private or bought, et cetera. So, but when they're buying a private company, there usually are no such rules, especially, if the smaller they are, the less likely it is that Apple has to announce it.
Right.
And so what we have since October, in the last 8 months, we've had Apple buying 9 companies, which is 2 or 3 more than they usually buy in a 12-month period. And that's really interesting. And it's I'm thrilled to hear it. I'm thrilled to hear that Apple is putting its money to work, even if it's especially when it's small companies that they can then incorporate into their culture.
And it's interesting when we find out the companies that Apple is acquiring, just how they fit in with the whole Apple picture. And I think sometimes we miss how they fit in because we don't know about the smaller acquisitions.
Right.
And you have to look at all the pieces to put it together. And Apple's really good about not giving us all the pieces.
It's very, very, very true. It's very true. So we'll have to look and see what comes out of that. I'm hoping that some of the better investigative journalists out there are going to be able to start digging and find some of these companies that they've been buying, because I personally find that really interesting.
Yes. And then we can start painting a picture of what it is we think Apple is doing with the companies they're snatching up.
Right.
And my guess is it's actually pretty fascinating.
Probably is. Now, how about this business about Apple opening more of its APIs and iOS up to developers?
I'm glad I was sitting down when Tim made that comment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that for me was completely unexpected. For developers, that's actually really cool, because it means at some point they may be able to tie in to system-level things to a much broader extent than they currently can on the iPhone and iPad.
Well, so let's. This is the way Walt Mossberg. This is the way Walt Mossberg put it. He said, "Let's talk about control. Your keyboard and your recognition, predictive typing, and all that stuff hasn't kept pace with Android. Google allows other people to make that technology. Third parties can give you a choice. Have you given any thought to a little bit less control?" So he's talking about the fact that with an Android device, you can download third-party keyboards that replace your keyboard on a system level.
And if you have never had the chance to play with swipe on an Android device, you are missing out.
I did play with swipe as a demo when they had the iOS demo app.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I personally wasn't impressed, but I know a lot of people who are.
Every time I have played with it, and every time I've watched people play with it on their Android devices, I sit back and silently wish that for all the different technologies that Apple rips off from other people, that they would get around to ripping this one off.
Or licensing it. I'd rather see that.
Yes, I agree, licensing. But the point is, when I see the swipe technology in action, I'm like, holy crap, we need this on the iPhone really bad.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see it as the only option, but
no,
as an option, it would certainly be nice.
Absolutely, I agree completely.
But now Android also lets you apps take over the home screen, which is what they do themselves with Google now, and it's what Facebook Home did.
I think it's pretty safe to say Apple's not going to let that happen.
I don't know. I actually don't know. I think that may be the case, but here's the thing. Home screen data is a very useful way to put a mobile device to work for you. The information that is on a home screen the moment you turn your device on. Same thing with the lock screen.
Yes, and here's how I see that working out in the Apple way. Apple creates a system where they give developers an API that they can hook into, so then we can choose which data modules we include in our home screen and our lock screen, but not something where they let other applications completely take over that experience.
That would be a way of doing it for sure, and that would probably be more in keeping with Apple's. Yeah, I'm torn because I'm actually in your camp. I don't see Apple doing it. Let me just be. I don't see Apple giving up that control. There is so much value in being able to ensure the user experience for the vast majority of Apple's customers that I don't see Apple readily giving up that kind of control. But like I said, I'm torn by the value that a dynamic home screen, a dynamic lock screen, I'm torn by the value that can give to us on our devices. And I currently see it as an advantage that Android has over iPhone.
And I'm certain that if you're looking at it as an advantage, there are people in Apple that are talking about this probably even as we speak and looking at ways they can address that advantage.
Right.
And I have a feeling that my idea is probably closer to what Apple would do than Facebook Home is.
Yeah, introducing a new class of apps called widgets that people can install and run from a widget manager. That does to me seem more in keeping with the way Apple would approach things. And I would probably install a Google Now widget in a heartbeat.
You know. Yeah, I could totally see doing that. And if you want to see an example of how widgets can be put together on an iPad screen effectively, just go take a look at Status Board from Panic Software.
Right. Right. Status Board as a home screen would be way cool.
Yes. Yes. There's a reason why Status Board is on the main screen on my iPad.
Right, but I mean, if it was just the default screen when you turned your iPhone on,
that would be really cool.
Or your iPad on, I mean, that would in fact be very useful. Same thing with the lock screen. And again, this is an advantage that Android has over Apple's iOS system, and so it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird in that. This is an example where Apple's closed control yields an inferior, a less desirable outcome, at the very least. That's being like super polite and politic about it.
No kidding.
So it's going to be interesting to see if that happens. But now here we have Tim Cook telling us, he says, on the general topic of opening up APIs, I think you'll see us open up more in the future, but not to the degree that we put the user at risk of having a bad experience. So there's always a fine line to walk there, or maybe not so fine. Which probably makes, I mean, you know, this, when you hear it being said fast, it doesn't sound as awkward.
Right. When it's being repeated slowly. Okay, so what that tells me is that Apple is considering a widget type system.
Yeah, and I could see them giving up that keyboard control too.
Do you see Apple at some point letting people choose what their default web browser and email client would be?
Email maybe, browser maybe. Maybe.
I know, it's a tough one because Apple likes to have control, and if they give up control over those apps, are they doing something that causes them to lose control over some of the data they're collecting or ads they're pushing? Or does it create a situation where they're now genuinely concerned about privacy and security on the devices?
Here's the deal. If Apple is going to allow third-party browsers in the App Store, Apple should give me the option of being able to use those to their fullest by making them the default browser. And that's a fact. There are different ways you can do that. You could do that, for instance, with just a little pop-up, which every app on the planet would put up. Ooh, do you want to make me your default option for this or that? Yes, they could do that. I don't think they will. I think that a more sensible option is to have a centralized place where you control it. So fine, I download Chrome, I download Dolphin, I download some other browser. But if I want to make it my default browser, I've got to go to the place in the settings where that's controlled, and I have to choose to make it my default browser. Because if I do that, I can probably choose to put it back.
Yes, I would assume so.
So, and you know, and that sort of limits people from accidentally, you know, having apps, you know, get them to do it, so to speak. It sort of limits that option. And if Apple was to do it, that's the way I think that they would do it.
Yes, and it goes back to control. And sometimes Apple's control seems like it's ham-fisted. Other times, though, I think people don't get just how much of a disaster their devices can be if Apple isn't maintaining the type of control they have.
Yeah, some people don't get it. And more specifically, some people are unwilling to acknowledge that Apple's control does have a lot of value to a large segment of users. You know, they look at the world through their own eyes and say, I don't need that control, therefore Apple sucks because they won't give it to me. Well, the reality is that there are a ton of people who love that control, and that's why iOS and iPhone and iPad do so well. The proof is in the pudding.
Yes, yes it is. And
that doesn't mean that they can't tweak things to make them a little bit better, and it seems like we're going to have some of those tweaks coming out. Now, I think another API that's going to be opened up is going to be access to Siri. I think that's only a matter of time.
Yes.
I don't know if it's going to be iOS 7, but it's only a matter of time before more developers have access to tap into Siri.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm looking forward to that because there are so many apps that I think could really benefit from having hooks into Siri.
Yeah, and vice versa, too, where Siri can have hooks into other apps. There's a lot of potential value there.
Yes. I mean, for me, I would love, without having to do workarounds, to be able to tell Siri to set a reminder or a task for me. And it goes directly into OmniFocus.
Right. Rather than just Apple's reminders.
Right.
Right. That would be very valuable.
Yes.
And that stuff is coming. I mean, see, we've said this before. We are at the beginning stages of Siri. Siri is a very big part of Apple's future. And what we're seeing now is a tiny part of what we will eventually be seeing with this technology, with this platform.
Yes. When I see the potential for where we can go with Siri, it reminds me of the Knowledge Navigator that Apple made a demo video of back in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
which was really cool. I mean, with the iPad as it is today and its limited Siri support, it is surprisingly close to what Apple envisioned with Knowledge Navigator back in the 80s.
Yeah. And by Apple, you mean Scully.
Yes. Which is kind of surprising to think that that a technology concept that Apple had from Scully or from the Scully era is something that, to a degree, has come to life for us now.
It's true. Now, there's another aspect of iOS 7. Several people made a big deal about Tim Cook confirming that Johnny Ive is heading iOS 7 design. And that to me was not news because we were told that 7 months ago.
Right. Yeah, that's not new news.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why anyone actually thought that was news. Nonetheless.
Well, we live in a world where people have short-term memories.
It's true. It is totally true. Nonetheless, in 2 weeks, you know, one of the reasons why Tim Cook is very, very tight with his information at D is because it usually takes place a couple of weeks before WWDC. And, of course, he wants to hold his most exciting information for the upcoming keynote. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we're being told, we know for a fact that iOS 7 and the next version of iOS 10 are going to be shown to us.
Right. And there are people that are seeing this as some kind of surprise revelation. No, that was actually in the press release that went along with the announcement of WWDC.
Right. Right. And one of the rumors that has come out is that, and again, this is something that we've long assumed because of the things we know about Johnny Ive's proclivities and what he likes, but it's going to be as Mark Gurman over at 9to5Mac reported, it's going to be black and white and flat all over, which I think is fantastic.
You know, the description I think is awesome, and the concept images that people are mocking up, I think a lot of those are great. I think we will see an interface that is flatter and is devoid of a lot of the skeuomorphic elements that have been weaving their way into OS X and into iOS. But I don't think it's going to be such a radical change to the operating system that we look at and go, holy crap, they threw everything out.
I will bet you a dollar, sir. I think this will be a very dramatic statement. I think that Apple is going to be looking to make an extremely dramatic statement that change is here and that the company is not going to be swept aside in terms of perception.
Oh, I think that you're right. And I think we will get a very dramatic presentation and very dramatic statement from Apple, and we will see some pretty hefty changes to the way the system looks and works across the board. But I don't think they're going to change it so much that it feels like they've tossed everything out and started over.
Well, then I have a subjective wager for you, sir. I think that it will be quite extreme, and we will find out in roughly 2 weeks, and I will wager a dollar with you.
Man, this is turning into the betting show.
It is. It is turning. It's turning into the wager show. All right. Now, this one's going to be a subjective one because we're clearly going to have to agree on who wins.
We will. But, you know, we are both proper gentlemen and indeed, men of honor.
Indeed.
So our dollar bet will be fair and true.
If someone can like take note of all these bets, by the way, and just sort of, you know, start a spreadsheet for us, we'd appreciate it.
That would be awesome because we're not going to do it.
Yeah, I really think that this is going to be a statement release. This is going to be a "I am Johnny, hear me roar" kind of thing.
Now, from when Johnny took over interface design to now, has there been enough time to basically scrap the interface and start over? And I don't know.
It might not be enough time for most folks, but we are talking about some of the best designers on the planet.
That's true.
And the thing here is, the secret weapon, I think, that Jonathan has, Sir Jonathan even, is that he probably thought about this for a long time before he got the gig. This is probably something that's been bugging him for
years.
While. Yeah. And, you know, we know that that several of the top execs were having problems with Scott Forstall. We also know that Scott Forstall was the champion of skeuomorphic design. By extension, I don't think that Jonathan would have gotten the job had he not already been thinking about it, if he hadn't have been able to say to Tim Cook, you know, this is what I want to do. You know, I know that I've been an industrial designer all this time, but I've got some very specific ideas on that, and I think that we can do it in time for to release this next year. Plus, keep in mind, iOS 7 is going to be shown to us. It's not going to be released.
That's right. I'm not expecting it to actually roll out onto our iPhones and iPads until September.
Yeah, until the end of September with the next media event and the release of the next iPhone and iPad iPad.
And keep in mind, we do not have insider knowledge that tells us there is an event happening then. It's just pretty logical.
Yeah, right. Yeah. This is going to be a statement release. This is going to be a, I'll just repeat this. It's the I Am Johnny, Hear Me Roar. And I think it's going to be a big deal. And I'm willing to put up a dollar.
All right, so a dollar it is. And now I have to ask, do you think...
Do I have a dollar? No, I don't, actually.
Well, that's all right.
Have a dollar.
Because there's enough time between now and when we see each other next for each of us to have raised a dollar if necessary.
Fair enough. Okay, all right, yeah.
Yeah, or to find someone to borrow one from. So either right. way, we're set. Do you think that by focusing so much on making a statement with iOS 7, that OS 10 is going to suffer for that?
Yeah, I do. I do, to a certain extent. I mean, but OS 10 has suffered at the hands of iOS for a while now. And I think this is just a reality. I spoke at the Silicon Valley Mac User Group earlier this month in May. This is being recorded on May 29th. And someone asked me there, it's like, you know, I'm putting words in their mouth, but basically the Mac is important to me and I want to see the Mac being more important to Apple. Well, I do too. Brian does too. I love my Mac. I spend a lot of time on my tower and my laptop. I want the Mac to be important to Apple, but the cold reality is that it's iPhone and iPad that are making all the money right now. And this is just a sign of the times. The Mac is still important to Apple, but it's not the most important thing to Apple.
Yeah, I agree. I think if it was at least equally as important as the iPhone and iPad, that the rumors that we have heard about Apple shifting so many people from OS X over to iOS would not have been happening.
Right. But, you know, at the same time, they are going to show it to us. So clearly they've been doing some stuff.
Of course. Yes.
If OS X development had been derailed too much, this would just simply be the iOS WWDC, and OS X would be shown to us, you know, when it was eventually ready.
You know, one way I can see Apple addressing the issue of having to shuffle so many people around and having OS X potentially suffer for it, would be to take... And just bear with me here, to take an approach like Adobe's. And what I mean is Adobe has is moving away from milestone upgrades to rolling out features as they're ready. So what if Apple were to change how they update OS X so that instead of doing these big milestone versions, as they get new features ready, they just start rolling them out to all of us?
Yeah, there's a difference. Well, there's several differences. The first is that Adobe is saying that because they want to, they have an excuse to slack off. That's my firm belief.
My feeling is it's not so much slacking off, it's just that all of their products are so massive that trying to do these big upgrades on a regular basis, it just simply doesn't work anymore.
It simply doesn't work. But the other thing is that you can't do that at the OS level because there are too many other things that depend on it.
Well, okay. So what I'm meaning, just for clarification, isn't changes that would be, critical enough that you need to do a revision number, like going from 10.8 to 10.9. But the things that, that bolt on to that foundation that's already there. So maybe they're planning on doing a major reworking of the calendar system, which doesn't necessarily have to include ripping out part of the plumbing of the operating system. But if it's not ready when they're ready to roll out the operating system, okay, roll out what is ready, and then 2 months later, when your new calendar system is ready to go, just drop that out for everyone.
I hear where you're going with that, but I don't think you can do that with an OS. Corporations would freak, and enterprises becoming an increasingly important part of Apple's business. And I think that it, from a support standpoint, it would be a huge problem.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But I don't think it's going to happen. I'm just tossing it out there as an idea for a way to address some of the manpower issues. Because clearly Apple is not going to hire more and more developers because they still run their startup.
Yeah, it's not like they can afford it.
I know. So
if they could just make some money, they could hire some more developers.
I know.
No, of course, I mean, there is well, I don't know. Apple probably does need to hire more engineers. But there's always the problem, of course, of if you want to have the best, there's a limit to how many people you can have.
Right. And at what point, even if you have all the best engineers, do you have so many that it becomes unwieldy and impractical?
Right. And I don't think we're at that point. I don't think we're at that point because if that was the real issue, pulling people from OS X to work on iOS wouldn't be a solution. Clearly, you need the more people on the iOS, but you still need them. You still need the people to be doing the stuff on the OS X. But so, you know, let's come back to the fact that Apple is going to be showing us the next version of OS X. So the company wouldn't be doing that if it wasn't ready to be shown. Again, it won't be released anytime soon.
Right. Or if they didn't have enough features to make it worth showing.
Right. And I assume that iOS 7 will be released before the next version of OS 10.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about releasing OS 10 at a completely different time. My assumption was we'd be seeing OS 10 around September, but you're right. There's nothing that says they have to release OS 10 and 10.9 and iOS 7 concurrently.
Wouldn't surprise me at all if OS 10 is showed to us at WWDC with a planned release for next year, like possibly even next WWDC. And I wouldn't have a particular problem with that. I'm happy for developers to have time to know, you know, to be able to incorporate what's coming.
As you were saying that, I started thinking, you know, waiting till next spring for the OS X launch, totally plausible. Waiting until next WWDC, I don't know. I mean, that is a year out, maybe 9 months out.
Yeah, it would be unusual for Apple to do that, but it wouldn't necessarily surprise me. But I tell you what I do want. What I want is a new Mac Pro. I want that to be announced at WWDC.
I would love for that to be announced at WWDC, but I'm not holding my breath. But yes, I would love for that to happen. It's been far, far too long since a Mac Pro update. Embarrassingly too long.
Tim told us that we would have one in 2013. He told us that in 2012. It's like next year we're going to have something in that space. That's what he told a customer in an email.
That's right. And this would be the perfect time to introduce whatever that product is.
Right. Absolutely. Positively. The developer conference is the perfect place to make that particular announcement because it's of interest to a niche in the first place, and most of that niche is sitting in the room.
Oh yes.
So yeah. I am hopeful. I am very hopeful that that's what's coming, and I also believe that that's what they're building in Texas with this plant that they're building.
Yeah, it would make sense to build the new Mac Pro in Texas because it's what I'm assuming is the lowest volume Mac seller.
By a lot.
Right. So why not, if you want to start producing computers in the United States, why not start with something that you don't have to produce as high a volume to make sure everything works the way you want?
And why not make it a product where the margins, where the margins on the retail price will support the higher costs that go with building in the States.
And the Mac Pro would fit that bill.
Absolutely and positively.
So, yes, I am so hoping we get that announcement, but I'm not holding my breath for it.
I won't bet you a dollar on that one.
No, that's not a fair one to bet on because...
No, because Apple could be intending to release a new Mac Pros in 2013, and there are six other months to follow WWDC where it would... five other months in WWDC. But anyway, there's plenty of time left in the year to do it, but I'm hoping. I'm just hoping.
Me too, especially... Well, among other things, because if developers at least know the computer is coming and know what its specs are, they can start working on apps that take advantage of that hardware.
Right.
And right now, when you're a developer working on a whatever Mac product, probably the last computer you're thinking of is the Mac Pro. I mean, you're coding for the iMac and the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro.
Right.
You're not coding for a Mac Pro anymore.
Right.
And that's a problem.
Right. Right. All right. On that happy note, it seems like just a fantastic place for us to call it quits.
I was thinking the very same thing. All right, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. My name on both services is Jay Gamut.
And you can follow me on Twitter at tmobrian. That's Brian with a Y. On app.net, I am, Brian Chaffin, also with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.